Welcome to A Million Other Choices. Thank you for joining me. We discuss dark topics here, and sometimes things get hard to listen to. My focus is always on victims and their families and friends, which can be very hard to listen to, so please be advised of this. Ad-free episodes can be signed up for through Red Circle or Patreon, where you can also get access to full-length bonus content. You can make a one-time donation at Buy Me a Coffee. Disclaimer and sales pitch are done. Next up, legal. All sources are publicly available information, and I use a wide variety of sources to try to ensure accuracy, but I cannot confirm the accuracy of publicly reported information. If you would like a specific source or sources, please email me at amillionofthechoices@outlook.com and I will provide it to you. You can also email me there with case suggestions and just general comments. Okay, we are done. Let's get going with what you came here for today.
Don't miss the biggest Maytag sale of the year at Lowe's. You'll find the Maytag appliances you need when you need them at a great price. Plus, when you buy two select laundry appliances, you'll get up to a $100 bonus via instant rebate. Shop Maytag at Lowe's. We help, you save. Offer valid through 531. See store for pricing and offer details. Advertise savings on all major Maytag appliances through Maytag.com and participating retailers. Prices may vary. Additional terms and conditions apply.
Today is rough, but some really good changes came out of the family's dark tragedy, which is a tragedy that I just can't even imagine enduring. Sonia Ryan was only 20 when, on January 30th, 1992, she gave birth to Carly. Dad didn't stick around, but Carly gave Sonia a new purpose in life and a reason to do whatever she could to take care of another person. And as Carly grew, the two of them formed an unbreakable and really close bond. Carly was lively and creative and just really a lot of fun to be around. She enjoyed entertaining her mom and then her younger brother who came along a few years after Carly had been born. Sonia remained a single mom, raising her now two kids on her own, and was young enough in her parenting to understand that kids need a bit of freedom and should be able to express themselves through like their clothing and hair color. But she was also old enough to know that there are creeps and dangers in the world and that kids need boundaries, even if they think they know everything. So although Carly and Sonia were close and much like friends, there remained a boundary that Sonia was still the one in charge and still knew what was best for protecting her daughter. And the tight-knit family lived in Stirling, South Australia. Stirling is a town of just about 15 kilometers outside of Adelaide city center. It's a small community of just about 3,000 people. Not a lot of excitement happened in Stirling. Carly was in so many ways a typical girl and yet also very extraordinary in what she gave her family and her community and her fun and adventurous spirit and really her outgoing nature. And this outgoing nature might have led her down a dark path as a teen, but after only one experience with some friends and alcohol and a super bad hangover and feeling very sick, she decided for herself that maybe her current group of friends weren't the best for her. And in 2005, when she was the ripe age of 13, MySpace came along, giving her the opportunity to meet online people from all over the world. And like many a teen girl at that time, to also maybe meet boys. Sonia was cautious of Carly's time online and often monitored the stuff that she was talking about and who she was talking about with her. And from what she could see of the chats and whatnot, it was all pretty innocent stuff, talking about her taste in music, clothing, fashion, and school, and just regular stuff. She did, however, start talking to a boy around this time, 16-year-old Brandon Kane. Now, Carly, of course, burst with excitement over this guy, and Sonia was not initially impressed because Brandon was 16 and Carly was only 13. And that kind of age difference, like at our age or at my age, isn't really a big deal. Like if my husband was 50 and I'm 54, I hardly think anybody would consider me a cougar over it or that I'm like predatory in any way. He's not actually. He's the same. He's 8 months younger than me. So that should be socially acceptable to most people. But the difference between 13 and 16 is a little bit more, I don't know. I remember myself having a 16-year-old boyfriend when I was 14, and it didn't seem like a big deal at the time. But if we had stayed together, which of course short, it was, you know, high school, so it was really short term, he would at some point be 18 and me only 16. And I think that might be illegal. Actually, here, let me read this to you from Canada's law website, because I find this really interesting. Canada's age of consent. The age of consent to sexual activity is 16 years. In some cases, the age of consent is higher. For example, when there is a relationship of trust, authority, or dependency. In other words, a person must be at least 16 years old to be able to legally agree to sexual activity. A 14 or 15-year-old can consent to sexual activity as long as the partner is less than 5 years older and there is no relationship of trust, authority, or dependency, or any other exploitation of the young person. This means that if the partner is 5 years or older than the 14 or 15-year-old, any sexual activity is a criminal offense. There is also a close-in-age exception for 12 and 13-year-olds. A 12 or 13-year-old can consent to sexual activity with a partner as long as the partner is less than 2 years older and there is no relationship of trust, authority, or dependency or any other exploitation of a young person. This means that if the partner is 2 years or older than a 12 or 13-year-old, any sexual activity is a criminal offense, which is kind of gross to think that a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old can consent to sexual activity with each other. A 16 or 17-year-old cannot consent to sexual activity if their sexual partner is in a position of trust or authority towards them, for example, a teacher or a coach. The young person is dependent on their sexual partner, for example, for care or support. The relationship between the young person and the sexual partner is exploitive. Seems like it would be no matter what. The following factors may be taken into account when considering whether a relationship is exploitive of the young person: the young person's age, the age difference between the young person and their partner, how the relationship developed, for example, quickly, secretly, or over the internet. Now, this over the internet one is really important, which we're going to circle back to later. And then whether the partner may have controlled or influenced the young person. Anyways, as usual, I got sidetracked, and none of that has anything to do with today's story. But I think it's important information to pass on to all of you parents and grandparents out there about how young someone can be to consent, which is actually quite surprising to me and also kind of gross. So Sonia had the right to be concerned, but also knew that this age gap was somewhat typical. So she kept an extra eye on their correspondence and phone calls. Carly, although somewhat interested in the emo goth scene known for producing brooding and grumpy teens that was popular at the time, Carly was also all things pink and colorful and happy and fun. So she had her own unique style of kind of a cross between girly chic and goth. So like dark hair and eyeliner, but pops of color here and there. She just seemed like a really great kid. She had a good level head on her shoulder that she confided in her mom about things. And this Brandon guy seemed fine. Like the conversations weren't sexual. They were just mostly about music. And like Brandon was sort of a musician type that was trying to get a demo together with the help of his dad. Now he lived with his dad, who was a single father, and his dad, whose name was Shane, would sometimes comment or like statuses that they had. And he seemed pretty involved in his son Brandon's music and supportive of it, and also supportive of him being friends or, you know, sort of forming this relationship with Carly. And there had been phone calls with this Brandon, so there didn't appear to be any catfishing going on. The photos weren't photoshopped. They were like candids and they were time stamped appropriately. And Brendan was 16, right? It's not like he's 40 or something in real life. And the computer that Carly was using was in the kitchen, and so it wasn't a private computer for her. And to a certain degree, this relationship felt actually good for Sonia because it obviously made Carly very happy, and it kept her at home rather than out in the scary world where there are creeps and weirdos. Now, cyberbullying wasn't really a thing yet, and because Brandon lived in Victoria and had been born and raised in Texas, the chances of them meeting in person, Carly getting, like, say, pregnant or something by him were pretty low. And over time, Brandon became online friends as well with some of Carly's in-person friends. She became online friends with some of his friends. He gave her support and advice, and he just seemed really good for her. There wasn't FaceTime at that time, but there was video chats like webcams. And so he would put the camera on so that she could see him at the computer just chatting with her. Carly was completely infatuated with him, and she was sort of giddy over their budding romance. They called each other all the time and started to make plans to meet. The messages continued to stay out of the sexual realm, and the online relationship continued on for the next 18 months, which, as you know, is practically a long-term relationship in the world of young love. And they started to make plans for the future for themselves. Brandon, he was now 18, and he was near finishing up school, and Carly's making plans for her 15th birthday, which in her world would have made her an almost adult as well. The problem was that they still hadn't met in person. Now, Carly was planning a party for her 15th birthday in January of 2007 and thought that this would be a perfect opportunity for him to make the trip to see her in person, meet her friends and her family as well. And Brandon really wanted to come, but he had made plans to visit his mom in Texas that week, and so he wouldn't be able to make it. But his dad, Shane, would be passing through Adelaide for some work thing. He worked for a security company, and so he could stop in and drop off some gifts for her that Brandon had gotten her. Now, Carly was disappointed that Brandon couldn't come, obviously, but really excited that at least she could meet his dad, which I guess she considered the next best thing, and that Shane, who in her mind had kind of become like a father-in-law, I guess, to her, that she'd be able to meet her, or that he would be able to meet her and her mom and her brother as well. Like, Carly considered them all one big happy family by this time. She had commented on Shane's posts as well, and Sonia and him had corresponded a little bit as well, sometimes on the phone and also through MySpace as well. Although Shane and Sonia thought this was young love and all that, but they kind of kept in touch with each other the way you do with your kids, friends, parents. It's not really so much a friendship, but kind of like a spying two-way relationship, just kind of checking each other out for character flaws or letting one parent know about a peanut allergy or something like that. But to Carly, they were this one big happy family, and she felt that Sonia should be thrilled to have Shane not only stop in, but like actually attend her birthday party. So the plan was that Sonia agreed to meet Shane first somewhere in public. She was pretty cautious herself. She still didn't really like the idea of this essentially stranger that they both only knew online coming to their house without first getting kind of a feel for him. So on January 25th, Shane traveled to Adelaide for a work function and then met up with Sonia, who asked for his ID, which he gave it to her, and it matched Shane's name, and he was wearing a polo shirt that had on his security company's logo, and he looked pretty unremarkable. He was in his late 40s, a bit paunchy, thinning hair, just kind of your average dad of a teenage boy. He seemed friendly. He was very understanding of Sonia's concerns, and like no red flags emerged. So Sonia invited him to the house to meet some of the family before the sleepover party that was Carly was going to be having the next day. So he came by, he met some of the family. No one really noticed anything amiss about him. He preferred to stick with the grown-ups and talk with them rather than, you know, hanging out with teenage kids. So that made Sonia feel more comfortable about him. Also, she knew what kind of kid Brandon was, so everything kind of lined up. So when he was getting ready to leave for the night, saying that he was going to go get a hotel room, he said, well, you know, don't be silly. We have a spare room. You can stay there for the night and then go do your work thing in the morning and then come back for the party. So this is all very cool. So the next day, the 26th, Shane returned to the house from his work function, and he had some gifts for Carly from himself, along with the wrapped gifts that Brandon had sent along, which Carly then opened later. Shane had actually purchased her about $400 worth of clothing and jewelry, and both Sonia and Carly were surprised that he would have spent so much and gone to such lengths for his son's girlfriend on her birthday. Carly was obviously, she was delighted with the gifts. Sonia, not as much, but she put any twinges of yuck away for now. After all, the party was beginning. There was so much family and friends around, and everyone was distracted by anything Shane was doing anyway, like particularly looking Carly up and down and getting upset when Carly was talking to her ex-boyfriend, who was also at the party, telling her that he was going to tell Brandon that she was cheating. Now, this freaked Carly out, and she didn't want to upset Shane, and by doing so then also cause drama with Brandon. So she let the matter go, and Sonia was not aware of this conversation until later. Now, just for kind of full disclosure here, there are a lot of reports that Shane had actually taken Carly out shopping for these gifts, like the two of them together, but I wasn't able to find anywhere that Sonia said that. And she's been pretty public since 2007, and I just wasn't able to confirm that information for myself, that it came from her directly. So he might have shown up with the gifts, or he might have taken her out shopping for the gifts. Either way, the gifts and the $400 value of them are confirmed. It just didn't come up in my research, which I try to be fairly thorough on, but I don't know, maybe I missed her saying that. Anyways, as the night went on, this was like a sleepover party with some of Carly's friends. The earlier evening had been with like family members and other adults. So Shane went to bed in the spare room. He shut the door. Sonia put all the girls into Carly's bedroom, and she made them leave the door open so that, you know, they didn't conspire or sneak out or anything. And then she went to bed in her own room. And the next morning she was up fairly early, and she walked by Carly's room and just kind of peeked in, only to see Shane. Now, he was fully clothed, but he was laying on Carly's bed next to her, and all the other girls were like on their floor mattress beds that they had laid around. And let me tell you, Sonia was pissed. Probably with a lot of like, I knew it stuff going on in her head, and also probably thankful that he was at least clothed. So she yelled at him in front of the girls to basically get the hell out of her house, like hootsuite. And at first Carly was like begging her mom not to wreck things with her and Brandon, but Shane gathered up his stuff, stormed out of the house. He didn't offer any kind of explanation for what he was doing, not that there really could be any good explanation for that. And he left. And after her friends had left, Carly had calmed down, and she confided in her mom that she was probably right. There was something creepy and off about Brandon's dad, Shane. During the night, he had actually tried to get a couple of her friends to kiss each other, and had also made advances at her, trying to touch her inappropriately, and had actually tried to kiss her. And that the gifts that Brandon had sent had turned out to be lingerie and a nurse's outfit, which kind of freaked her out a bit, since Brandon and her didn't really talk about that kind of thing with each other. So Carly agreed that she would definitely not have anything to do with Brandon's dad anymore. But she still wanted to keep her relations up with Brandon. And Sonia did not like that one bit and knew like something is off. And if something's off with the dad, then something's probably off with the kid. So Carly promised that she would break it off with Brandon, and she seemed to have done that. Like, there were no more messages and calls, and Carly stopped talking and kind of gushing about him. And Sonia also took the added step of sending an email to Shane, telling him to stay the hell away from the family, especially Carly, and to never speak to them or try to message them again. And Shane had responded with this angry message calling Sonia a bitch, and that basically, too bad, so sad, Carly was one day going to be moving in with them and she would never see Carly again. So this kind of cinched the deal for both Sonia and Carly, that Shane was someone that they should probably best stay away from. Well, 3 weeks later, on February 19th, Carly made plans to head by bus to Adelaide with some friends to do some shopping, and then they were going to have a sleepover at one of her friends' places, which is something that, you know, being 15, she had done many times before that. So around 4:30 that afternoon, she headed out, hugged her mom goodbye, and told her that she loved her.
Carly told me she was going to meet her friends in the city, which she always did. They'd jump on the bus together in the hills and go down to the city and hang out. And at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, she left. She gave me a huge big hug at the door. In fact, she gave me about four hugs. And as she skipped off the veranda, she said, "Love you, Mum."
Can you still hear those words?
Yep.
And they were the final words that she spoke to you?
Yep. How lucky am I that it wasn't an argument, or, you know, that I was telling her off about something. Four hugs and a skip off the veranda, "Love you, Mum." Little did I know that would be the last words that I'd hear from my daughter.
And then the next day, Carly didn't come home at the time that she was expected to, and Sonia called around to her friends to discover that they hadn't actually made any plans to go shopping or to have a sleepover. So she knew something right away was wrong, and she immediately contacted the police. Now, whether they took her disappearance seriously right away, rather than kind of passing it off as a runaway, really didn't turn out to matter, because at 6 a.m. that morning, Kim Gordon had been out for an early morning run along Horseshoe Bay, which is about a 7-hour drive from Stirling, and had come across a young woman floating in a shallow part of the water off of the beach. And she had run to the parking lot for help getting her out of the water. Came across a fisherman, Ian Slade, who had helped her pull her out of the water. And they tried CPR to revive her, but by the time the paramedics arrived on the scene, she was pronounced dead. She had been in the water for several hours at that point. Sonia had gotten a call that morning from someone saying that she had found Carly's ID and purse on the side of the road. But where they had found the purse wasn't anywhere where she was supposed to have been that day or that night. So police informed Sonia that a report of a young woman's body had come in that morning and that there had been no identification on the person, and she kind of matched Carly's description. So fearing the worst, but also unwilling to accept that this young woman might be Carly, she made the drive to identify her body herself.
I walked into a room with a curtain and they said to me, "Are you ready?" And they pulled the curtain back and there was my daughter. Her fists were clenched, her jaw was clenched, she was beaten. She suffered terribly at the hands of a monster with no remorse.
Carly had suffered a number of injuries. There was 19 of them in total to her face, neck, and about her arms. Most of them were around her head and neck, which were caused by fists or a blunt object. Her cause of death had been drowning. However, she did have sand in her lungs, which indicated that she had likely had her face pushed into the sand on the beach. And that's when she would have fallen unconscious and was dumped in the water, probably in hopes that she would float away.
She was raped, bashed, suffocated, and put into the ocean.
How did you cope hearing that?
Didn't. How would anybody cope hearing that?
This story is already horrible and awful, but it's about to get a whole lot worse. So the police hit the ground running, basically trying to trace Carly's movements and find out where and like why she had wound up down at the beach, which was many miles from her home. And Sonia tells them about this Shane guy and the son Brandon that had met, and they had this off behavior that Shane had had. But it turns out that Shane and Brandon Kane don't exist. However, CCTV footage from around the boardwalk shows Carly at a number of locations in the company of two men starting at around 7:04 p.m. Nothing appeared to be amiss between them. It is assumed that the older man was this Shane and the younger man was this Brandon character. But obviously, that wasn't their real names. Well, eyewitnesses put the last sighting of Carly with the two men sitting on a rock on the beach at Horseshoe Bay around 9:30 p.m. And there was also a light blue car spotted in the parking lot in Port Elliot. And the witness remembered the car because they remembered a security badge on the dashboard of the car. At the scene, the forensics team determined that there had been signs of a struggle on the beach. Her jewelry, like her bracelet and some other items, were strewn around, and there was a cut fingertip of a latex glove there as well that they had planned to test for some DNA. And going back over the thousands of messages between this Brandon and Carly, it became evident that recently Brandon had become somewhat aggressive with some of Carly's friends online, like he was trying to isolate her and make himself like her only contact. And after Sonia showed police the nasty email that Shane had sent her, they had the phone numbers traced, only it was clear it was a fake name that had been used, and some of the calls that were traced back to this camper's village in Walkerville. And police, using their policery, decided that there were two men fitting the men's descriptions that were on the CCTV footage that had rented a cabin there during the time of some of the calls that were coming from there. Their name and address came back to a place in Melbourne under the name of Gary Francis Newman, a divorced father of three. So the police arrived at the house in Rosebud West, and parked out front was a light blue car with a security badge on the dashboard with the number 24 in bold print on it. And inside the house, sat at his computer desk, was 48-year-old, pudgy and balding Gary Newman, currently occupied by chatting online with a 14-year-old girl in Perth. And after arresting him and his 17-year-old son as well, who is not named, they did a thorough search of his computer and found that Gary had a thing for fake online profiles and underage girls. In fact, in their investigation of this pedo creepo, they found notebooks, like pages and pages of a notebook with names, all of course fake names, user IDs, passwords, and fake profiles on MySpace, all kinds of other social media platforms that were popular with the kids, and that he had been using these to groom hundreds of underage girls from all over the world. They also found a huge, like, ginormous collection of pornography, mostly young girls, and he had a penchant for girls in school uniforms. And of course, within these notebooks were the profiles for both Brandon Kane and Shane. It was also discovered that before Carly, Gary had targeted a girl in the States, but she had cut off contact with him when his conversations had taken a sexual turn. Now, the same thing happened with a 14-year-old girl in Hong Kong. He had actually arranged to meet this girl, and when she didn't show up, he told one of his sons, who he probably didn't mention the part about she was 14, that when he found her, he was going to leave her looking like packaged meat that you get at Safeway. He had even tried to catfish Carly's friend Ashley, but again, when it got sexual, she stopped talking to him, and that's when he turned his attention to Carly. So right off the bat, Gary said he never met Carly, didn't know anything about nothing, but he couldn't really deny all the evidence of his communications between them. including the phone calls. Now, he had tried deleting all of them from his computer and phone, but police found them, like, no problemo, as per usual. They also found that Gary had gone to some pretty big lengths to fool not just Carly, but also her mom. Like those webcam videos of Brandon sitting at his computer, that was actually just a video on loop of just a random teenage boy on a webcam that he would play sometimes for her to watch. Now, she didn't realize it was just like a loop. Instead, she would have thought that the grainy and rather primitive webcam video from 2007 was in fact her boyfriend Brandon. Instead, it was just some innocent random kid. Now, it gets super complicated when we bring in the second male that was seen on the CCTV camera footage. It is clear from evidence that Shane had called Carly and she had continued to communicate with both Shane and Brandon while her mom was like at work, or she would use a friend's computer or phone or something. And Shane had lured Carly to the beach that day by telling her that Brandon was going to be there. Now, Brandon never existed. That much is very clear. The phone calls and all the messages were all sent by Gary playing the parts of both Shane and Brandon. However, he somehow convinced his 17-year-old son that day to come with him to the beach and play the part of Brandon. Now, his son, who has never been named, was not involved in the earlier messages and the catfishing, but he obviously knew enough about what was happening to go along with being this Brandon character. Now, Gary's oldest son, who was 19 at the time, did later testify that on the day that he had been thrown out of Sonia's house, he had come home furious that not that he had been thrown out, but that Carly had rebuffed his advances and had, according to him, called him fat and bald. And he had told his older son that he was going to fix her up. And he even asked him to help him kill her. Now, the son had just figured that he was blowing hot air and kind of just sloughed it off. However, that means that his 19-year-old son knew that his dad was involved or trying to be involved with underage girls. The 17-year-old son had apparently only recently been returned to his father's care from foster care, hinting that there were some serious issues in the family brewed in total. However, this son was also arrested and charged with first-degree murder, because he had admitted that while he was held in juvenile detention is actually when his dad started to plan with him to meet up with Carly on the 19th of February. Now, in his version, all he did was show up and play the part of Brandon in order to gain Carly's trust. But that Carly had again rebuffed his dad's affections and tried to walk away from him while they were on the beach, but that he had then pounced on her and started beating her and pushed her face into the sand until she was unconscious, and that the son only helped him put her body into the water. However, Carly showed signs of sexual assault, which, I mean, doesn't mean that the son was the one that did that, but that he likely knew what his dad really wanted from Carly and what the plan was all along. But of course, both of them pled not guilty to charges of murder. Now, by the time it went to trial, which was in 2010, Gary's lawyer threatened to quit on him because he was just so unreasonable about what he wanted to do and disruptive through the whole process. He blamed his son for the murder and said that having a large number of online passwords and profiles was actually a really smart move, and that's why he did it. He only did that in order to protect himself from identity theft, but he could not deny speaking with Carly. But in his opinion, none of that was sexual, of course. Like he said, he saw her like a daughter and he was just being a nice guy to like a troubled kid. I mean, after all, Gary said he was asexual, so there could not be any kind of sexual motive there. He had no interest in sex at all. Now, he didn't bother to try to really explain his large pornography collection with that. And he also had trouble trying to find a reason why his DNA would be on the part of the latex glove that was found at the scene. Up to this point, the real identity of Gary and his son was being protected from being published. Now, I believe that was due to the fact that if they identified Gary, that would be too easy to identify the son who was underage. And none of his excuses went over very well with the jury. And so he was convicted on January 21st, 2010, which was just days before Carly would have turned 17. He was sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole for at least 29 years. Justice Trish Kelly said that Gary Newman deserves a life behind bars for his grossly perverted plan to deceive, seduce, and murder Carly. It was a terribly cruel thing you did to this beautiful, impressionable 15-year-old child. I say child because that's what she was. A child that fell in love with the idea of the handsome, musically inclined, and rather exotic Brandon Kane. The real man was, in fact, an overweight, balding, middle-aged pedophile with sex and murder on his mind, end quote. Now, as for the son, he was actually acquitted of all charges, which was likely charges of coercion by his father. After his conviction, Sonia said, quote, I hope that he suffers, that he rots from inside out, and that he sees Carly's face every morning and is haunted for the rest of his miserable life.
I think what people don't realize is the trauma, and I wouldn't want them to realize. Unfortunately, these crimes continue to happen, and there's more and more people being arrested for trying to procure children.
Thank God he can't hurt another innocent child, but it's frustrating that taxpayers will be paying for his breakfast cereal every morning. He had no right, end quote. Oh, and Justice Kelly also released Gary's name. Now, his son had been acquitted and was over 18 at the time, so it was fitting that everyone should know exactly who this asshat is. So after this, his ex-wife came forward with her own story about the lovely Gary Newman, that he had beaten her once for being late coming home from work and controlled her entire life, including refusing to allow her to get a driver's license. He had tried to sexually assault their own daughter when she was only 14. And on one occasion, she wanted to go shopping with a female friend. And when she told Gary that she was going to go out, he grabbed her, he beat her, and dragged her into the bedroom. He sat on her and punched her until she was barely conscious. She had crawled as far as to the front door when Gary's mother arrived and rang for a doctor for her. And when the doctor asked if her husband was beating her, Gary held her hand so tightly that he almost crushed her fingers as like a warning to remain silent. So that would explain why Gary was living as a single man. It doesn't explain how he managed to be a single dad with two of his children with him and under his care, though. Now, as for Sonia, well, she would use her grief to not just change laws, but really kind of change the world, at least in regards to online grooming. She started the Carly Ryan Foundation, whose website not only allows parents and kids to get certified in online safety, they created an app called Thread, which is a personal safety app that anyone can send an alert that they are in danger or that they need help. One of the greatest things that the Carly Foundation, with the leadership of Sonia Ryan, did was lobby for legal changes in Australia, which have now actually reached out to many other countries, that Carly had been actually the first person killed in Australia by an online predator.
My daughter Carly was groomed by an internet predator posing as a young boy, when in actual fact he was a middle-aged man. He not only created the profile of this young boy, but he also created the profiles of this young boy's friends to create a real person, so that Carly thought she was talking to a real young boy. And she was talking to him for over 18 months, when in actual fact it wasn't a young boy at all. So unfortunately, he persuaded Carly to go and meet him alone by saying that she would meet this young man, when in actual fact who she met was this man, Gary Newman. And
because she wouldn't go along with his sexual advances and his intention, he murdered her. He took her life from her. And in that moment, everything changed. And Carly was the first girl murdered in this country by an internet predator. And as a mother, as a parent, I don't want to see anybody have to go through that ever. I don't want to see any child have to suffer in such a way. And this is a motivation behind the work of the Carly Ryan Foundation and everything that I do every day.
This work that you do means that you are constantly retelling and recounting this story. And hearing you talk about it now, it's obviously still very, very raw.
Yes, it is. And it definitely is very, very difficult, especially in the beginning, the first year. There would be times when I would finish a seminar and shake and be physically sick. Of course, there are physical traumas from something like this, and it is difficult. But what the reward is that children come up to me afterwards and say to me, thank you so much for helping me. I'm going to go and check my friends list on the computer now. Or when we get a call from parents saying, you really influenced my child's behaviour on the internet, I can't thank you enough.
Do you think that we all in some way take the risks associated with being online too lightly?
Yes, I do. Their intended audience is very different from their actual audience. I mean, they're potentially talking to over 275 billion internet users worldwide that have access into their home. And unfortunately, some of those people are not good people and they don't have the right intention.
So is the answer then to not let children online at all?
No, I don't think that's the answer at all. What we need to do is to educate kids about the dangers, teach them about the real, what really goes on online. Families should make a family agreement about internet use. And, you know, if a parent is providing internet use, along with providing that service, should come some kind of an agreement that the family's personal information is not going to be given out to strangers online.
At that time, she said, Carly's law will make it a crime for an adult to use a carriage service to commit an act in preparation for or planning to cause harm to or engage in or procure sexual activity with a minor. Importantly, this will include those that misrepresent their age.
I was really quite surprised at the lack of traction it received.
But we also need to contemplate the full range of circumstances. On the face of it, that would be an offence.
It was cast too broadly in the sense that it would drag in conduct that was not actually criminal, and that was the reason why it was not back.
Some of the objections were to do with, well, what if a disabled person, you know, didn't know what they were doing and tried to make contact with a minor? Now, of course, it's up to the discretion of the authorities.
You must take great care to ensure that it targets the harm that you want to target.
I've spoken to different police who have said, you know what, this could make a real difference. We could end up, you know, apprehending somebody, seizing their computer, being able to take DNA before they harm a child.
So this is a law that will quite literally save lives because it allows the police to charge someone for engaging with a minor in an inappropriate way before they actually act on that and meet in person. Carly's law enables authorities to take action against these online predators sooner, which means that they can infiltrate offenders before they can commit an act against a minor, and with a lot harsher consequences for it, resulting in a maximum prison sentence of up to 10 years. Not only will this allow law enforcement to intervene before a predator has a chance to act, but it will also serve as a strong deterrent to those who wish to prey upon vulnerable children. So good job, Sonia. She brought an awareness to online grooming and the techniques that these asshats use of gaining kids' trust by posing as someone their own age and with their own interests before the conversations ever turned sexual. And before Carly's law, it actually wasn't a crime to interact with minors online, even if you were using a fake profile name, as long as the conversation didn't get sexual. So this change in this law was huge.
A Victorian man found guilty of murdering teenager Carly Ryan wants an Adelaide court to quash his conviction. The Court of Criminal Appeal has heard the jury in his trial wasn't properly instructed by the judge.
Gary Newman chose not to attend the hearing, which focused on what the judge said to the jury in his murder trial. He's serving at least 29 years for bashing Carly Ryan and throwing her into the water at Horseshoe Bay, where she drowned. He met the 15-year-old on a vampire website by pretending to be a much younger man. Newman's lawyer Nick Vidaz argued the jury wasn't told in full detail how it could return a guilty verdict for manslaughter. He also said that evidence Newman sexually abused his victim weeks before her death was too prejudicial and should have been excluded. Prosecutor Tim Preston said the trial judge's directions to the jury were sufficient. The court has reserved its decision.
And that was the horrible murder of Carly Ryan. And as usual, I'm going to be back again next week with another horrible and awful case. In the meantime, you can do your usual rate, review, subscribe thing. There is merch available on Spreadshop if you just search for A Million Other Choices. If you want ad-free and some bonus episodes, you can sign up on Patreon or also on Red Circle. And again, you just search for A Million Other Choices and you can get that stuff there. As always, thank you so much for listening.